Okay, you and me, Justin Bourne, Louis Jean, still to come. Aaron Ambrose will stop by as well. We'll talk plenty about the Scotia North Division, the Leafs-Flames game last night. A big night tonight around the NHL, not just for the Scotia North, with Tkachuk versus Tkachuk, the debut of Dom Ducharme behind the bench as the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, and a rematch of Tuesday's Vancouver-Edmonton game. But also, Jeff Skinner is a healthy scratch for the third game in a row as the Buffalo Sabres face off against the New Jersey Devils. Hold tight for a conversation about that. Bourne, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well. It is a day like this that I wish Anthony was with us. It's Stewie was here just to say welcome to Hockey Central. Thanks for joining us on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. Stewie, William Nylander.
Yeah, it really makes hosting duties easy when you can just say a name of a player and then hit mute on your mic.
Put your feet up, have a sip of coffee, chill out a little bit. So I'll ask you, William Nylander. I know, listen, you're writing about him. You tweeted plenty about him last night, this morning as well. It was one of those games where it was kind of a snoozer up until Mangiapane scored, and then it was a scramble in front. Nylander gets his stick on it. He scores. And then in overtime, of course, it's William Nylander with the command performance around Sean Monahan, and the Toronto Maple Leafs win 2-1 over the Calgary Flames. Before we get to the game, just give us your thoughts. I don't want to turn this into the huge Nylander debate, because that's kind of getting tiring.
Yeah.
As everyone seems to have already made up their mind about him. But just give us your thoughts on William Nylander.
Well, you know, that felt like a microcosm of his career last night. It was like a frustrating defensive lapse that, you know, some coaches might have stapled him to the bench. Sheldon Keefe gives him another chance, and he goes out there and rewards Keefe by doing the things that few players in the NHL can do. So, I don't know. You know, you look at Nylander's game last night. He leads the team in shot attempts, shots, chances, high danger chances, goals. Like, okay, what else do you want from the guy? But if he doesn't get put out there, you know, after the defensive error with under a minute to go, those things never happen, and we think he's a write-off, and should you trade him? So I give Sheldon Keefe a lot of love for his decision to keep rolling with Willie last night in the face of a little bit of a lapse. And by the way, that defensive lapse was more Engvall's than his, but he still should have been there to help him out. But still.
Okay, so you tweeted about this. I want to get into this a little bit more. Explain what the breakdown was in the Andrew Mangiapane goal that put the Flames ahead 1-0 last night.
Well, in the corner is a 2-on-2. It's Engvall and Dermott, and they've got Lindholm and Mangiapane. And basically, Lindholm has the puck near Engvall, who skates it towards Dermott, which is a simple handoff. Like, you hand him off to the D's, going below the goal line, and then just you receive Mangiapane, and that becomes your guy. Engvall continues to puck stare, focus on the play, and Mangiapane walks through the two of them, and Engvall tries to take Lindholm, who's already been covered by Dermott. So that's where the initial breakdowns come from, but all good defenses have layering. I think of the Boston Bruins did this for years. It's not like no one ever beat a player one-on-one against Boston. It's just you trusted that the next guys were there to help out, and Nylander's supposed to be the help defense there to take the guy in front of the net, and he's just a couple of inches too high. Like, it's not a crisis, but it's always a couple of inches too high with him, and that's where the frustration comes from with him. It's just a little bit more commitment on one side of things, and nothing, and something like that doesn't happen.
So by too high, you mean, just for our listeners that may not be familiar with the term, too high in his own zone, looking for the quick breakout.
Yeah, do you remember when you and I were kids? Did you play wing or you played D, right?
I was a goalie until I was 16, and then I played D.
Oh,
and
wow.
When I was a D, I was always screaming at the forwards to come back. They're all just hovering around the neutral zone looking for a long pass.
Well, when I was a kid,
dogs.
Oh, they are dumb, lazy dogs mostly. I was a winger, so I was the laziest dog of all. But when I was in my D zone as a winger, when I was young, my job was the point man, right? Even if you were the weak side winger, you just had your points, and that was it. It was 3-on-3 low, and the wingers took the points. That's long since been done away with. You know, wingers come down and help now, and if they pass the puck up to the point, well, you can skate out at it, get in lanes, block it, do whatever. So Nylander's, he's covering no one up there. He's covering a patch of ice that's not dangerous.
I remember the good old days when, as a winger on the back check, your only responsibility was to make sure the trailing defenseman didn't get in front of you. That was go back and look at your 80s hockey, and it's like, Ooh, the position of wing sure has changed. I mean, every position has changed profoundly, but that's one that jumps out at you.
You could do
right
nothing
away.
For whole shifts, Jeff. Nothing.
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah. Right? And you were just a table hockey player too, right? And your coach would always say, "Oh, if you can't extend your stick and hit the boards, you're out of position. You better get tighter to the boards there, Mr. Winger." Okay, so that's the Mangiapane play. And then there was the scramble in front and everybody poking on it, and Nylander's the one that gets his stick on it. What are your thoughts on the overtime goal?
You know, that's the type of thing, you know, I tweeted something last night during the game where I basically said that, you know, it was a 0-0 game and it felt like a game where the team that has the more talented players is going to see someone do something special. Just one thing that the other team can't muster, and then that's going to be the ball game. And that was kind of the thing. It didn't happen, you know, it looked like Calgary was going to win for a bit, but, you know, being that it went to OT, it's like how many players in the league can get wide with that speed, cut in, and quickly go forehand, backhand, roof like that? It's an elite play, and it's why you put up with so much with William Nylander, because you get 2 points from him there, you know, where if you have a guy who works hard all the time, you probably don't.
You want to get to Stewie's comment on our group chat? Did you see this?
Oh, no. What's he got?
The goal was weak side D's fault. Willie has to be there as safety valve.
Yes, 100%. But, I mean, you watch it unfold to get there. Engvall should just be with him the whole time. But, yes, at that he definitely should have been down there. He's on the hook for sure.
Stewie is listening. Stewie is out there somewhere in his car, on his app. Who knows what Stewie is doing, but he is tuned into this Nylander talk. Watch his Twitter feed for the gifts. There's a few things to go over last night. We'll get to the Toronto Maple Leafs side of things in a couple of seconds, but from the Calgary Flames point of view, you know, if Nylander doesn't score that goal to send this thing into overtime, what are we talking about today? Dave Riddick, who has shut out the Toronto Maple Leafs 2 games in a row. Dave Riddick, who still, you could make the point, was the first star last night, and not William Nylander. Leafs outshooting Calgary 39-22, but Dave Riddick was, Justin, just flat out outstanding in that game last night.
You know that in the history of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Dave Riddick has the best save percentage of goaltenders who've played 5 games against the Leafs. In history. In history, Dave Riddick is the best goaltender against the Toronto Maple Leafs ever. Oof. So, you know, he was good again last night. He has 2 games in a row. He's been very good and very close to another shutout. And probably, you know, a huge reason why that game was as close as it was. I don't know about you, but did it not just feel like that game was, like, sleepy, heavy-legged? Like, the season schedule seems to be catching up to the Leafs. I know some other games had higher intensity, so I won't lump in the whole NHL. But that was a slow hockey game, I thought.
It was, and I kept having to do a double take at the shots on net because it didn't feel like that was a 39-22 game in favor of the Toronto Maple Leafs, did it?
No.
I mean, there was some consistency that we've seen. I mean, what's the one consistency that we see every single game? Red line to red line, we see Ilya Mikheyev creating chances. Red line to red line, he's a great hockey player. The only problem is he can't get the puck over the red line, specifically shorthanded. And again, there it was last night with Mikheyev, and Elliot was having a good laugh on it during in our second intermission yesterday, saying, what does this guy need to do? Like, his shooting percentage is lower than one right now, as everyone screams unsustainable, and that will turn around. I don't know when it's going to for Mikheyev. Like, that seems to be the one consistency in every single game. Mikheyev and his feet, his speed are going to create chances, but he's not going to take that round black thing and push it over that thin red line.
He's the anti-Nylander. I wonder if Stewie has Mikheyev's jersey. Because, like, you don't care if this guy ever does anything, you know, offensively, because he's so good everywhere else. Just the complete opposite of Nylander in terms of Nylander sleep around and then put one across the goal line. But yeah, it's getting halfway comical. Maybe it's not for him, who's trying to look for more contract dollars in the future. But yeah, it's unbelievable that pucks just will not go in for this guy.
Maple Leafs power play 0-7 on Monday. Maple Leafs power play 0-4 last night. Is this just a blip on the radar? What are you seeing with the power play, Justin?
I saw more of, you know, what I talked about the game in general, just like heavy boots. I thought the breakout, you know, give Calgary credit. I think they're one of the better penalty killing teams. I think Backlund is one of the best penalty killing forwards in hockey, but they're not coming up the ice as a unit. It looks sluggish. Everything about it just lacked zip, and I don't know, it looks like the ice is bad or something, but no, you're bound to have these stretches. They're not going to be at 40%, but it looked ugly to me.
So who jumped out at you then? I mean, Nylander was going to get all the headlines and all the talk today because of the two goals and the nature of how he scored both of them, two completely different plays. Michael Hutchison, there's another, you know, that guy's been a pinata for the Maple Leafs. He was real good. Mm-hmm. Thought TJ Brody and Morgan Riley were real good for the Maple Leafs last night. Who stood out for you? Actually, from both sides, who stood out for you?
Well, I'll give the Leafs bottom line and bottom pair some credit. I think the bottom line was on for something like 15 shots for and two or three against, that being Spezza, Barabanov, and Boyd. Barabanov had a ton of chances last night.
How about that little toe drag between his own skates to start coming down the right side to start the game?
Yeah, and then he donated the puck to the Flames immediately after because he couldn't believe he did it. I feel like he is a very good player and has a lot of talent, but he is just not going to be able to put it together at the NHL level. Like last night's, he was unbelievable, and he still can't, you know, to McKayev's point, can't get it across the line. He's just not going to be good enough offensively to be an offensive player for this team. So then what's the role? I don't know, but that line was really good. You can't argue with the results that they were really good. And Bogosian and Dermott were really good too. That's a nice pair. Again, on the ice for a lot of chances and shots for. Dermott was on the ice for 7 chances for the Leafs and just 1 against. So a good night from him and his pair in general.
I thought Dermott was excellent last night. Austin Matthews, and as we find out now, the hand issue. And we saw this play itself out, certainly after the Rasmus Anderson situation and those two going back and forth, but also in the third period where, listen, Austin Matthews ain't taking draws, and Austin Matthews didn't, you know, start the overtime taking a draw. That was John Tavares and Mitch Marner out there. Do you have a thought on the Matthews situation, or should we even call it a situation yet?
Well, my thought was this, and I don't know where you are in this. Stewie would cuss me out if he was here, but like,
she that's just for a group text now. He's just, yeah, she's listening somewhere, and I
yeah,
can
he just
on
come
text
on the show? like, should just give him a night off? Like, you know, he took one in the ankle, and I'm sure that's hurting him a little bit. His wrist is hurting him. You got a 6-point lead in the division. You know, not to take anything for granted, but like, you don't want to push this guy through everything possible in a season like this, and you have a bit of the luxury of resting guys. What do you think? You sit him out for a night? Just give him 4 days between games instead of two all the time?
I want to get to your point about him blocking that shot and the way that he did it. And Cassie yesterday on Wednesday Night Hockey brought this up and showed how, you know, you look at someone like Zach Hyman and he's got the shot blockers on his skates and Austin Matthews doesn't. And I know that it's an instinct to turn your foot to try to block a shot. But if you're Sheldon Keefe and Austin Matthews is out there, I don't know if you even do this to elite level players. You just sort of let them ride. Would you say to him, like, you know Sheldon better than I do, could you see Sheldon saying to Austin Matthews, when you're in the defensive zone and you're going out to the point, keep your skates straight. Don't turn them. Don't turn them at all. You know, like, just take it off the shin pad if you're going to block it, or if it goes past you, well, that's fine. We just can't afford to see you turn your ankle like that. Yeah. I know Marner does it all the time. Like, Marner goes out like Johnny Bauer, kicks Avin and be like, that's the one that, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, that terrifies you watching the way Marner does it sometimes. But I saw that yesterday, and I'm glad Cassie brought it up because it made a lot of sense. Like, why not just keep your skates straight?
Yeah, you know, he's quickly earning a reputation here with his defensive prowess. I think he's top 10 in the NHL in block shots amongst forwards anyway. I'll have to confirm that, but he's blocked a ton of pucks this year, and you know, he's feeling good about his defensive game. Maybe it's a Hutchinson's in net thing. I don't know, but yeah, I wouldn't want to see that from him. So I'm sure they're like, look, you got to take care of yourselves. We appreciate you playing both ends of the puck, but let's not put ourselves in a bad position here. I also don't think you want to ask him to wear shot blockers if he's not comfortable with that. So
no,
yeah, just straight out of the puck is the way to go.
You have a thought on Hutchison? Before we get to a break here, we're going to talk to Louis Jean in a couple of moments about the Montreal situation. Game one, Dom Ducharme behind the bench in the head coaching capacity against Winnipeg tonight. But do you have a thought of 21 of 22 saves, Michael Hutchison last night? I thought quietly a really good performance.
Yeah, it was a really good performance, but it's, you know, always just keep in mind, we don't need to overreact to small samples. We don't need to say he had a good hockey game, so now this guy can be our backup goalie for the year. Or now, you know, maybe he should push Jack Campbell. Or let's just, it was a good game. Every time you get a good game out of Hutch right now, who I think is probably not quite NHL level, but maybe a backup level goaltender. You know, every good game you get out of him, you take it as a win and just hope you don't have to rely too long, because, again, I'm less confident in his game.
No, do you not remember the promise that we all made to one another at the beginning of the season, Justin? Have you already forgotten? We all promised to overreact to every single situation, every game, and every moment.
With Hutch, do you even need Freddie? You could trade him and use Freddie's cap room.
Okay, now you're picking it up. Now you're going full talk radio here on us. That's good.
That's better.
We'll hit a break. Maple Leafs next in action Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers next in action tonight as they face off against the Vancouver Canucks. Calgary takes on the Ottawa Senators. So, yes, it is Matthew versus Brady. Kachuk versus Kachuk. This is a stretch of four in a row that Calgary plays. This is their first Ottawa experience, which is a lot different now than it was at the beginning of the season. Just ask the Montreal Canadiens of recent note. But the other Canadian teams, the Montreal Canadiens tonight face off against the Winnipeg Jets. Dom Ducharme's first NHL game as the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens is this evening. Louis Jean, our friend from TVA Sports in Quebec, will join us here in a couple of moments, and we'll talk about what this means for the Habs and what the future of that position is for the Montreal Canadiens, not just for now, but the future as well. Louis Jean in moments. You're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Do you want to be featured on Hockey Night in Canada? We're giving you the chance to be part of the Rogers Hometown Viewing Party this Saturday, where you can virtually meet the crew plus NHL alumni. Be the fifth caller through right now to try to win. Call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590 for toll-free, or star 590 on your cell. You can also enter for the chance to win a spot in the Rogers Hometown Hockey section of the Sportsnet app. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590. Welcome back to the program. It is the beginning of a new era of Montreal Canadiens hockey as Dom Ducharme will be behind the bench in a head coaching capacity as the Montreal Canadiens face off against the Winnipeg Jets. Jeff Merrick and Justin Bourne along with you, joined by Louis Jean, our friend from TVA Sports. Louis, how are you today, first of all?
I'm doing outstanding, gentlemen. How are you doing?
We're good. First of all, before we get to, you know, expectations and first game, listen, I'll be honest with you. I think for everybody, yesterday was a bombshell. And, you know, speaking to Elliot yesterday on television, he said, you know, the whispers were starting after Sunday's loss against the Ottawa Senators, and whether the Gallagher play would have counted or not on Tuesday. It sounds like there still would have been a press conference on Wednesday at some point with Mark Bergevin. But on a scale of 1 to 10, Louis, how shocked were you at the coaching decision yesterday?
I was really shocked. And you know, I know that there was some noise. I know there's really a lot of heat on Claude, but I thought for sure he had those two games in Winnipeg. I know that there's a lot of people that come out of the woodworks and say, hey, listen, you know, this how can you be surprised by this? The team was struggling. The team was at a loss for solutions, and you know, they just, you looked at them play and you're like, well, where is the team that was so dominant the first 10 games? Like, where's the confidence gone? Where's the mojo? Where is that complete team effort that we saw at the beginning of the year? But I still was shocked. I understand listening to Mark Bergevin. I understand his decision. I understand why he decided to go in that direction. But I just thought, because of the experience, because of what Claude Julien had accomplished in the past, and because of what we saw, the eye test at the beginning of the year, I thought they were going to be able to right the ship. And you know what? To come back to your point, that game on, what was it? I'm losing a sense of days.
Tuesday.
But on Tuesday night in Ottawa, you're right. I mean, they could have won it. I mean, that goal, to me, that's I still don't understand that decision by the NHL, and I'm not. It's not because I'm a homer. I do not understand how that goal doesn't count. So I saw a lot of fight. I saw some guys drop the mitts because they care for one another. I saw Shea Weber play his best game of the year. I saw a lot of signs, and even Mark Bergevin talked about that. It's not like the team gave up on the coach. The message, it was the message he felt that just wasn't coming across well enough anymore.
Justin.
The question I'm struggling with is just about their expectations and kind of when things got out of whack or what's fair for this team for expectations. You know, they were 24th last year and made some offseason improvements, but that's a pretty large gap to climb up to be one of the best teams in the league, and their record is still pretty good. What do you think is fair expectations for this team? Obviously this is not good enough right now.
No, it's not. And the expectations are through the roof. I mean, forget about what you saw last year. This team would not have made the playoffs if it wasn't for the unique format because of the pandemic and because of COVID and the bubbles and all that stuff. And so that changed things. It changed things in the way the owner and the GM, even the team, the guys in the locker room, the way they saw their own team. And so all of a sudden, there were expectations. And now they make all these trades. They make all these moves. They have the start that they have. They have the key players in key positions. They have Carey Price, who hasn't been anywhere near where he needs to be since the start of the season. They have Shea Weber, who's getting older, who isn't getting any faster. So they need to win now. That's the message. That's why they made this move. So I realize and I understand, even, you know, and I'm with you. I sort of think, okay, well, you have to go through a progression as a team, don't you? Before you win, before you expect to be a championship caliber team, you have to go through those trials and tribulations and those difficulties. And this team wasn't even a team that was considered to be a playoff team last year. But because of the moves they made, they feel, and the core pieces that they have, they feel that they have to go for it right now. That's why this move was made. That's why Dom Ducharme comes in. You can still question, you know, the some of the young kids they have. Can you realistically try and win with Jesperi Kotkaniemi and Nick Suzuki in the middle? I mean, as two really important pieces. That's why I think this is just the first of probably several other dominoes that are going to fall. I think Mark Bergevin realizes that if he has these high expectations, he's going to probably have to make some moves.
One of the things that did raise some eyebrows, because, you know, both you guys are right. Like, what happened in the bubble raised that, even just getting there, and that was nothing with their doing. We all recall a trade deadline when Bergevin was saying, like, we're rebuilding and we're getting rid of pieces here. And the bubble changed everything. But let's not forget, too, Claude Julien did not coach. That was Kirk Muller. And there was the initial success against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then they ended up losing to the Philadelphia Flyers. But there was that series that they won, and many thought, okay, if Claude Julien is going to, you know, walk the plank here, rightly or wrongly, one would assume, Louis, that Kirk Muller would get the job. But he's cast off as well. Is that part of the shock for you too?
No, it's not. I know. I got a lot of texts and calls yesterday suggesting what happened. Was there something between Kirk and between Claude? And you know what, it's not a shock, and I'll tell you why. I had a discussion years ago with Jeff Molson, the owner of the team, and he said the biggest mistake I made as an owner was not understanding the importance to the fan base of having a coach that can speak French, who can communicate directly with the fan base. And I know for some people in certain markets, I know people in Toronto listening to us right now are saying, are you kidding me? You should hire the best guy available for the job with that franchise, and forget whether he speaks Russian only or French or whatever. It doesn't matter. It does to this team. It does to the market. It does to the owner. When he brought in Randy Cunningworth and replaced him for the end of the season, when they fired Jacques Martin, he said that was the single biggest mistake he made, not understanding what it meant. And you have to understand, in this province, the coach has a direct connection with the fan base and speaks to the fan base and is in the media even more than our premier here in the province. So, I mean, when you talk about hockey as a religion, it really is in Montreal. Whether they're good or bad, You know, it makes that a big difference. So I know a lot of people thought Kirk Muller probably should have had the job, but were surprised that he didn't get a shot. Yes, last year in the bubble was really, those were unique circumstances. I don't think for one second they considered him because of what I just mentioned.
That's interesting. Well, one thing I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't follow up on was just you mentioned that it's possible that Bergevin sees the possibility now that he has to make more moves to really go all in if you're going in. What could you see him doing?
Well, I mean, listen, here's the issue is, you know, making trades is not easy, you know, in regular times, for sure. Normal times. It's even more difficult now when you've got COVID to deal with and quarantining and all that stuff. But I think, you know, I really think that they probably look at what they have up the middle and they're like, okay, can we realistically win? Because I don't think it's a question of whether you make the playoffs. That's a given for them. They have to make the playoffs. Making the playoffs isn't enough. It's how many rounds are you going to win? So you're going to need experience. You're going to need guys like Jesperi Kotkaniemi and Nick Suzuki. I think the talent is there. I think that, you know, both those players have a tremendous future in Montreal, but they're inexperienced. And so, you know, do you want to throw them in the fire? And do you really want to put all your chips in the middle of the table with guys that don't have enough experience? That's a major gamble in itself. They can't win faceoffs. That's something that you see across the league. It takes time to figure that out. And so I think that they're going to need to improve to get some veterans, to get some help up the middle. I think that's, you know, that's something for sure they need. They probably need as well somebody that can help them on the blue line, perhaps a puck-moving kind of defenseman, somebody that can add a little bit to what they have already. They've got, to me, a really, really good team on paper. I feel as though, you know, between the experience and the bite that they have, I see exactly where Marc Bergevin wants to go, but I also think, and I think that they've come to the realization they're going to need to augment what they have. It's not going to be easy. Are they going to be able to do that? I don't know. But what I do know is that, you know, if you have these expectations, you know, Marc Bergevin has been around long enough to know that, you know, if you want to win, it's probably a lot to ask of Nick Suzuki in year two of his NHL career and Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who's in year three of his NHL career, but is one of the youngest players in the NHL still. So to me, but you know what? I just want to touch on one thing. Marc Bergevin, I have a lot of respect for what he's done. He said yesterday that it's on him. He's not afraid to make tough decisions, you know, and he's done this throughout his time in Montreal. He has been heavily criticized for not spending to the cap. He has been heavily criticized for some of the moves that he made. But you know what? In his gut, if he feels it's the right thing to do, he's not going to do a quick fix. He's not going to do things that may be popular or may save him time or may endear him with a portion of the fan base. He really does what he thinks is best. And that in a market like Montreal, with all the noise and all the pressure, that is very, very difficult. And so for that, for me, I really respect him being able to make those decisions when I don't know how many people would be able to do that. You can agree or disagree.
You know, one of
the...
The only question I have is, as I'm hearing you talk about this, Louis, though, is I'm on board with this, and it's a difficult decision that that Marc Bergevin had to make. But one of the questions that we've had, I think a lot of us have had, and not just this season, but for a number of years about the Montreal Canadiens is, what's happened to Carey Price? And what kind of, I know that, you know, Marc Bergevin went out there and got some insulation and in Jake Allen, who has been, you know, in the seven games that he's played for Montreal this season, he's been real good. Like that has been a great move by Marc Bergevin. I think Allen needed that change of scenery, although he always played well at home in St. Louis or on the road in St. Louis, but at home where he had the problems. I wonder, you know, are the Montreal Canadiens going to really be able to do something unless Carey Price gets his game back? Now, he hasn't been elite since the 16-17 season. He had that run of about 4 years, and there was a gold medal in there, and Carey Price, you know, earned the reputation of best in the world. But since 2017, he hasn't been that guy, and we're seeing steady decline year after year, Problem is, he's on a $10.5 million ticket going through to 2026. So I look at this and I say they can make as many moves as they want to make. But until Carey Price turns it around, because as you all know, bad goals can undo a lot of hard work, does anything really matter? Like, is the whole thing here about getting Carey Price's game back, Louis, essentially is what I'm asking you.
Yeah, you got no chance. You've got no chance of doing anything, of getting in the playoffs or doing any damage in the playoffs if Carey Price plays the way he's played this year. Like, to me, I was really encouraged with what I saw in the playoffs last year. I saw Carey Price dominant. I mean, I hadn't seen him like that since, as you said, since those trophy years, since the year where by himself, he was winning games. Yep. And I hadn't seen him that sharp, that determined since then. And that's why I thought this year, with all the moves and the start they had, and he hasn't been good. He has not been good from the start this year. But they were still winning games. And Jake Allen, by the way, deserves a lot of credit because he has been phenomenal. He's come in and has been not just a pro, in practice and the way he's facing shots and everything, but he's fit in and he has won games. But to come back to your point, I think Carey Price is to a certain degree, partly responsible for Claude Julien losing his job. I'm not saying it's just on him. I understand it's a team. And I understand the coach has his faults as well. I mean, I think everybody has a part in this. But I think, that game in particular, you look at the game they lost on Tuesday night, to me, it's three bad goals. It's three goals that you cannot allow. And if you're another goaltender, if you're a guy who's just fighting to get in, you may be in the minors the next day after that kind of performance. Not you may be, you're probably, it's almost a for sure, a guarantee that you're in the minors. So for me, if you want to do anything, you got to get Carey Price back on board. I don't know what it is that's wrong. They've gotten Jake Allen to rest him, and so they've rested him, but now maybe it's too much rest because he can't find his game anymore. And when he's in, he's not, there's so many reasons. Listen, at some point, a hockey player has to play hockey. And I think they just need to ride him. I think he needs to first and foremost. I mean, when you look at the Michael Jordans, because, people have sort of started wondering, did the team abandon on Claude Julien and everything? And I don't think that's what happened. I'm not saying everybody was happy. I know there was a lot of confusion. I think that there were probably mixed messages between all the coaches and the way they were trying to do things. I don't think that guys said, we're done. We've had enough of Claude Julien. I really don't think that's what happened. But were they still, were they as sharp as they could have been? Were they paying attention? Were they following the game plan and the system as much as they could have? No. But what I do know that sometimes happens, and you guys would probably know a heck of a lot better than I would, is that Michael Jordan is always 10 out of 10 in his preparation. And LeBron James is 10 out of 10 out of his preparation. And Tiger Woods is the same. And Peyton Manning was the same. And, those elite, elite, elite players. And Sidney Crosby is the same. But sometimes when things aren't going as well, are you still 10 out of 10 in everything you need to do to make sure you're ready for 7 o'clock when the puck drops? I don't know that. But what I see is Carey Price is a lot, and this is an understatement, a heck of a lot better than what we've seen for long stretches in the last few years, and certainly what we've seen this year.
Well said. Louis, on that, we have to wrap up. That was some really good stuff. Thanks so much for stopping by. It is day one, Montreal Canadiens with Dom Ducharme as the head coach against the Winnipeg Jets. So, soit comme on dit en français. Louis, thanks so much, as always, for stopping by, mon chum, and we'll catch up down the road. Thanks, pal.
Anytime, guys.
Ah, ça c'est bien. Louis Jean from TVA Sports in Quebec, covering off the Montreal Canadiens tonight. They face off against the Winnipeg Jets. Some interesting stuff there, hey? I mean, how many times have you heard it, Borny? Show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. When coaches win Jack Adams Awards, the stat you should go look at right away always is a goaltender save percentage.
Yeah.
And when they get fired, go look at the goaltender save percentage because you could draw a line right between the two.
Yeah, no, it just could not be more true. There's like rarely a coach who's starting goaltender who has a good save percentage that gets fired. So there's some connection there for sure. Not going to pin it all on one guy, but better play from Carey would go a long way.
On that, we'll take a break. Aaron Ambrose from the national team will join us. We'll talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Get on the Ottawa Senators page as well. It's Senators and Flames later on tonight. First of four meetings in a row between these two teams. So we get to watch the Tkachuk brothers go head-to-head and also get our thoughts on the PWHPA big game this weekend in New York City as part of the Dream Gap Tour. Aaron Ambrose of the national team here in moments on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hockey Central continues. Okay, so Borny, just as a quick follow-up to our conversation there with Louis Jean, this is from Eric Engels here a couple of moments ago on Twitter. Indications are that Jake Allen gets the nod against the Jets. Price not on the ice. Allen getting warmed up by Stefan Waite.
Price not on the ice, okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Never a dull moment in La Belle Provence in Montreal, despite the fact that the Habs are in Winnipeg to face off against the Jets this evening. Dom Ducharme's first game as head coach of the Habs. We are pleased now to be joined by Aaron Ambrose of the Canadian national team to talk, amongst other things, and we will get to the Dream Gap game at Madison Square Garden on Sunday. The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Calgary Flames last night, kind of a snooze. First of all, Aaron, thanks so much for stopping by. I think you just got off the ice, correct?
Yeah, I think my heart rate's still at about 160 right now. So,
okay, so if you wanna catch your breath a little bit, have a quick squirt of Gatorade or something, throw a towel around your neck, you can chill.
We are not on the same page. I'm laying in bed with a cat and haven't exercised in 2 months. So you keep it up.
Thanks for having me, guys, by the way. I got it. Thank you.
Aaron, pleasure is ours. What just a wide brush thought on last night's game. I don't want to prejudice by saying, oh, well, you know, shots were 39-22. Leafs outshot the Flames. Dave Vertic was excellent. What was your takeaway from last night's Toronto-Calgary game?
I think that it was a great hockey game for the Toronto Maple Leafs to learn how to win. I think we talk so much about that all the time, and our good old friend Mike Babcock used to say that the boys need to learn how to become men and they need to learn how to win. And I honestly think that those kind of games, like, it wasn't going well. The pretty stuff wasn't happening. So get a greasy goal, right? Like, that's what I was getting frustrated with their power play, because when power plays aren't going well, you got to stop trying to make it pretty. And I think that they need to put way more pucks on net and just, again, look for those greasy goals around the net. And it doesn't help that you have Simmons out. I mean, Hyman was back, but Simmons and Thornton and those big bodies in front of the net. But sometimes those are the ones that you just need to bear down around the net to make sure those happen.
The one thing I wonder about, and I don't disagree with you, obviously, I wonder if the Maple Leafs can even do that, though. Like, the idea, like, that's not how Mitch Marner plays. That can be how John Tavares plays. Like, he has the ability to be a table hockey player if he needs to. Like, I know players can adapt and skill certainly always adapts, but do you think maybe just in this Leafs team's DNA to not simplify things? You know what I'm getting at, Aaron?
I don't want to agree with you, but I am agreeing with you, and I don't do that often. But I do think, like, I get what you're saying, and I think that it's harder for them to do it, but I don't think you can't tell me that Mitch Marner can play greasy and play a little simple sometimes, because he does that and he learns how to simplify his game when things aren't going quite as well. But I think it's more the D, like, Travis Dermott, stop trying to be fancy. Morgan Rielly, stop trying to be fancy. Like, let's get shots from the point, right? Like, those are the things that create havoc. And it's so easy for me to sit here as a defenseman and say that, because it's my job to get shots through. But instead of looking for a backdoor pass, like, let's put pucks on net. It's so cliche, but I honestly think it would make the world of a difference for him.
Aaron, maybe you could tell us just a little bit, just to step away from the NHL for a second, and tell us about the practice that you just had and, like, what you guys are working on and towards and what it's been like during a pandemic trying to stay at your best.
Well, I can tell you, Justin, that it is different. That's for sure. Like, we had seven skaters, I think, today. So it's, like, that's why the heart rate's so high, because you're going every drill, but then you got to take breaks between the drills because you can't do back-to-back reps at a good high intensity. And it's different for sure. And I think that we've adjusted really well. We actually go to camp again on Monday, which will be a lot of fun for us to go out there and be with the group again. And I mean, all things are looking positive for a world championship at some point, and obviously moving forward into the Olympics with centralization, everything come the fall.
And World Champions this year, Championships this year scheduled to be in Halifax. We don't know if that's going to be April. We don't know if that's going to be May. Is there a frustration from the team, like saying like, let us know, give us some kind of indication here. Like, what would the level of frustration for you and your team be?
I think it's out of our control, and I think that we continue to put in the prep and the work that we have to in order to be ready for whenever it's going to be. And that sounds so cliche, but obviously we are still in a global pandemic, and that's kind of the big picture that we do have to remind ourselves of, that it's not going to be an easy plan. Nothing is right now at any point in life with everything that's going on, but whether that's planning an outdoor barbecue in the summer, like who knows what's going to happen, right? So we know there's a lot of work that has to go into it, and we know that it's out of our control. So we continue to just, put our skates on whenever we can with the group, whatever group that is, and just be thankful to be a part of the national program, the PWHPA, and any events moving forward.
Aaron, can we get your take on just all the positive news surrounding the women's game and the partnerships that are being developed with NHL clubs lately?
Yeah, I think Justin, you just put a big smile on my face because it just reminded me of Madison Square Garden on Sunday. And
yeah,
I mean, obviously you got the Toronto Maple Leafs coming on board. You've got Chicago. Like, all these teams continue to step up. And I know, Merrick, that the original six is your favorite. So we've got three of them, and we just continue to want to continue to grow the game. And I think in having these big clubs, like, these aren't just, like, we've had support from Arizona, we've had in the past, like, these are clubs that continue to step up and support our game and support women's hockey, which everybody talks about it come the Olympics, right? And that's our biggest thing, is we know that everybody loves women's hockey. So, but actually to get the support from these big, big clubs, and I mean, to play in the biggest arena in the world, I would say, with Madison Square Gardens, like, that's pretty awesome. And I know we're also very excited that it's going to be on Sportsnet. It's going to be on NHL on NBC. Like, these are really, really big things for us and in the women's game.
That is Sunday, by the way, at 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Now. And by the way, to your point about the quote-unquote original six, I will settle for the arbitrary six, Aaron, or perhaps better phrase, the solvent six. But original six.
No can do. Well,
I always bug people. There's no such thing as an original six. There's an original one, the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody else is an expansion team. We can all go back to 1917 and see that one. But you do mention, like, look, the Rangers are on board, the Maple Leafs are on board, the Blackhawks are on board. Like, even if you're the most casual, Aaron, observer of the women's game right now, I don't think any of these are one-offs. And I've been public either here or on the podcast or on television and saying, like, I believe this is heading towards the NHL getting involved with the women's game in a greater capacity. We're seeing it at the club level now with the Rangers, the Leafs, and the Hawks. I would imagine there will be more announcements at some point as well to see other teams get on board. I strongly believe that it's only a matter of time until the NHL does so. From a player's point of view, and I know you guys are forest for the trees for a lot of this because you're training, you're working out, but you guys also talk. Does it feel that way to you? Do you feel that this is heading towards something eventually?
I believe that it is heading in the right direction for sure. I think that NHL clubs wouldn't be supporting us and providing us these opportunities if there wasn't a hope and a desire to stay around in the long run, right? Like, how many times do you one off something and invest in it just to not see it grow, right? Like, whatever it is, they're clearly supportive of us. And obviously there's a lot of things that, like you said, we have to focus on our training, and a lot of it we don't get to know and we don't get to be aware of. But at the same time, like, we aren't dumb, and we're sitting here with three incredible organizations that have come out and stepped up to the plate, and we're excited for that, and we're excited to kind of move forward with these groups.
What would you say has been the sort of the greatest gain in women's hockey in recent years? I don't, just as an observer, the quality of hockey is absurdly good right now. Where do you think the game has come farthest since maybe 10 years ago?
Well, I think if you, like, if you look at any women's hockey game right now, like, they're all kind of just, they never disappoint. I mean, you think about Sochi and everything that happened there with the post. You think of Pyeongchang when they had the shootout. Like, again, these are all the Olympic moments that everybody thinks about. But then you go back to the CWHL, and we had an incredible Clarkson Cup final, like the last game in the CWHL. And unfortunately, we didn't win. But, I mean, those games are something that they only get broadcasted every so often. So that's our big thing. Like, I can guarantee you that Sunday is going to be such a good game because you have just such superstars playing in the game. And then it's a matter of, like, we haven't played a meaningful game in a long time. And for Secret to be backing us and everything that we're doing. And I can tell you that Hillary Knight will probably come out on absolute fire on Sunday. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to have something to say about that on the opposing team for sure.
We are heavy on time. Otherwise, get your thoughts on Ottawa and Calgary. Kachuk versus Kachuk tonight, but we're plumb out of it. Aaron, it's always been a delight catching up, and it continues to be so. Good luck with getting your heart rate down after your hard, vigorous skate here. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and we will definitely catch up soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Justin.
There she is, Aaron Ambrose.
Thank you.
Who joins us from the Canadian national team. Yeah, great. Plug for Sunday. That's fantastic. It's the Dream Gap Tour from Madison Square Garden, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Now as well. Closing thought for you, Justin. We've got a couple of games here. Are you going to be richer, or are you keeping your money in your jeans tonight?
I am not keeping my money in my jeans. I've got Calgary in regulation, and I think Montreal. I think I picked Montreal.
Habs over Jets, Dom Ducharme. You know, I wonder about, Elliot and I were talking about this on TV yesterday, what type of an effect this has on certain players. And Elliot's eyebrows are all about Philippe Deneau right now. No goals so far this season. You wonder if a coaching change, Justin, might be able to change. I mean, that guy's like a Selke trophy. I mean, he was on my Selke list. A lot of people as well.
Yeah. There's more to give there. By the way, I have Calgary and Vancouver as my bet. I forgot.
Aha.